T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And to talk about all things Gardo's, we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline and welcome on Zach Meisel of The Athletic. Zach, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for that grand introduction. How are you?
Good, except I almost said you're from Cleveland.com, so yeah. I kind of feel like a moron.
It's been a while. That's the stomping grounds of my past.
Listen, you've got a hell of a resume there, friend. Now, I do want to I want to get to the Gavin Williams stuff. I want to get to the Tristan McKenzie stuff. And I thought you and Jason, you guys really did a great job on the Tristan McKenzie write-up last week, so I want to give you your flowers on that. But in terms of the Guardians' fast start, I know the locker room's not going to say that this surprised them. Has this fast start surprised the Guardians organization, though?
It's funny because when you win games, you say stuff like, oh, well, we're just a – you know, we're a tight-knit group, and we're playing for each other. We're all pulling for the same end of the rope. And then everyone hears those things, and they're like, oh, man, this team is unlike any other. And those aren't things that, like, the White Sox are saying because they're 3-20. It sounds good when you're winning. And they'll talk, you know, they've talked about how everyone on this team reported to camp 2 weeks before spring training began. And they were humbled last year, and they didn't want to repeat the mistakes they made last year. So they had motivation, et cetera, et cetera. That all sounds great. That doesn't guarantee anything. So I think from the organization standpoint, yeah, there's surprises. They've never had a better start to a season in franchise history. That dates back to 1901. So it's surprising. It doesn't guarantee anything. But this was supposed to be – there were a lot of unknowns this year. You had a new coaching staff. You have a lot of the same young players from last year who – you were hoping would take some steps forward, but you don't know. And so, obviously, it's not just the fast start. It's the fact that there are a lot of people who haven't gotten going yet, or, you know, they've done things in spite of injuries. It's been someone different every night offensively. It's been guys emerging in the bullpen who they didn't expect to do this. So it's a lot. There are a lot of positives here. And then the question is, where does it lead? You know, are you getting answers on some of these young position players? Is there a path forward for this rotation that to give you some stability? So all good things so far. Definitely some surprises. Because, look, I mean, Nick, if I told you that, you know, they'd only have Bieber for 2 starts, you wouldn't see Gavin Williams, Jose Ramirez would be slumping. I don't think you would have predicted 17-6.
You are correct on that.
Zach, with that being said, what do you need to see from the Gardos in the coming weeks, coming months here, that lets us know this isn't just, you know, a bit of a blip? Is this something that's real?
Yeah, I think there's 2 components. Number one is Tanner Bibee and Tristan McKenzie taking ownership of this rotation and saying, look, no Bieber, no Gavin Williams for some length of time. You know, you can only ask so much of Carlos Carrasco at age 37 or of Ben Lively, who's kind of been a journeyman. You can only ask so much of Xavion Curry or whoever else they'll have to lean on at some point. Bibee and McKenzie and Logan Allen to an extent can be guys who give you innings and lead your rotation. They have to. So I think that's essential so that you don't burn out this bullpen. And then 2 is just learning about the position players. Like, is Will Brennan a dude? Is Tyler Freeman a dude? Is Estevan Florial someone that you want in the lineup on a regular basis? Because if not, you know, at some point, Kyle Manzardo can only crush AAA pitching for so long. And there are some other guys down there who are stating their case for a call-up. So I think the rotation is going to be essential. And then just filling out this lineup. The top half has been so good. The bottom half has been cycling through a bunch of young guys and trying to figure out if any of them can stick. And sooner rather than later, I think you need some answers.
So to kind of go back to the piece that you and Jason wrote about Tristan McKenzie and the option to get Tommy John last year and obviously his struggles to start the season, I know he's coming off a improved performance in his last start. But how confident is the organization that Tristan's going to be in the rotation all year?
Yeah, I mean, I know that there are nerves. I also know that if you look around the state of the game right now, there is not a single executive or coach who's not panicked about a pitcher that they like eventually suffering an elbow injury. I mean, I've had players refer to it as an epidemic. Pitchers who are completely healthy saying that, like, there's just a natural fear you have to live with. You know, in McKenzie's situation, the first thing that needs to be said is he has said he feels great. No pain, nothing. It is, you know, his issue, and I think, you know, the conversations that Jason and I had with him were taking us through the decision he had to make, what he went through last year, because he got different opinions from different doctors. And I think it's difficult to know exactly what you need as a player. You know, you're not a medical professional, and you can take all the input from the professionals, but you still have to make the decision. And, you know, there are a lot of factors at play. Pain tolerance is one of them. Your arsenal and how an elbow injury would affect that moving forward if you don't get the surgery. And if you do get the surgery, and of course, the stage of your career, you know, the timeline. I talked to some pitchers these recent weeks around the league who were saying, like, you know, no one knows exactly what's causing all these elbow injuries. It's a safe guess to assume that everybody trying to throw 100 miles an hour is playing into this. And yet a lot of pitchers say, but I need to be able to throw 100 miles an hour to earn a paycheck and to get opportunities. And if I blow out my elbow doing it, you know, that's a side effect. Like that's a risk I have to take. So with McKenzie, you know, he opted against the surgery. He came back at the end of last season. He felt good in his two starts. And then he was able to have a more normal offseason. So, like, we see the stuff, right? He's not too concerned about the lower velocity. But to me, it's more he's been able to get by with 91, 92 in the past. It's more just being able to lean on the curveball and the slider. And the main thing is you got to have great command. Like, he's walking a ton of guys right now. And some of that is probably related to the fact that, you know, an 89-mile-an-hour fastball is going to have to be placed perfectly and not in the middle of the strike zone. So I think it's a work in progress. He seems confident that there are better days ahead. He's figuring things out each start. But you never know. You never know what's going to happen health-wise. And I think, I mean, we see with Gavin Williams today, it's like nobody is safe from this. So and I think everyone is struggling to figure out the best way to navigate through these things.
Zach Meisel on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. So you mentioned Gavin Williams. He experienced a recurrence of elbow soreness. I'm just reading your tweet now to you, but it's for the people,
you.
Not just, and by the way, well-constructed tweet. All right. Just as we get started here now, in your tweet, you say he's going to get an injection and he'll be shut down for 7 days before resuming that throwing program. Is this something that should be viewed more as a momentary setback or a significant concern here?
So their hope is it's a momentary setback. You know, he was going to start a rehab assignment this week where he was probably just, let's say, like three rehab starts would take 15 days. You know, he was 2.5 weeks from returning to the rotation, let's say. Instead, you know, he's going to hit the pause button for a week and then get back to it, and you have to ramp back up slowly but surely. So it's certainly delaying his timeline. I'd be a fool if I tried to guess exactly what this looks like going forward, because we've seen, again, with these injuries, it's like you're never in the clear. So the hope is that, like, it's better that he's only shut down 7 days and you go from there. We've seen other pitchers get shut down for a lot longer. So we'll see. It's just, it's not what you want. He's a guy who has just elite stuff. And in his second year, I think, you know, you could have had some really high hopes for him, and you still can. I mean, but it's just, again, like, the recurring thing is the issue here. This was something he experienced in March. And after he threw 3 innings the other day, I think it was like 45 pitches or so in Arizona, he felt it again after that. So why is he feeling that? Why is this still an issue 2 months later? Like, that's, you know, something that someone smarter than me is going to have to figure out. And they hope an injection will, I guess, help to alleviate that. But, well, we'll see. If he's not throwing in 10 days, then I think there are more questions.
What do you think about a Josh Naylor extension?
Sure. Yeah, that'd be great, right? I mean, he's the heart and soul of the lineup. He's going to hit free agency after next season, so might want to lock that in pretty soon. He loves playing with his brother. He loves his teammates. And with someone with his – I mean, he's super talented, and he's made incredible strides as a hitter over the last year. But he also is a first baseman DH who has never played more than 120 games in a season. So I'm kind of surprised that something didn't get done in the spring.
So with that being said, where do you think the holdup is more likely to come from on a Naylor extension, from the team or from the player?
I would usually guess in these situations it's the team not offering enough. I know they had conversations with a handful of guys in the spring. I was not under the assumption that anything got really close. And they usually, you know, it's also you – this stuff is typically cut off when the season starts because players don't want the distraction. The team doesn't want to create a distraction. But I was surprised. You know, I thought there was an opportunity to, you know, do Naylor, Kwan, Tanner Bibee even. Like, those guys seemed ripe for it, but nothing got done.
So with that, Zach, obviously we've all noticed the power uptick this year. The Guardians are kind of middle of the league at power. That doesn't sound sexy until you realize they literally hit like 112 home runs last year and were last in the big leagues. Obviously we're seeing more doubles as well. Is this an organizational philosophy? Has anything changed, or is it just they're actually fulfilling their potential, which they didn't do last year?
Yeah, I mean, it's like last year they were flying like their seat on the plane was in the bathroom at the back of the plane, and now they're flying in business class. Like, that's – it can't be stressed enough how middle of the pack is an enormous leap for them in the home run department. There are some philosophical things. Like, Tyler Freeman already has 3 home runs, and that's – he was never a big power hitter even in the minors, but it's taking what you do well, making a ton of contact, and leveraging that so that when you get a pitch – that is the perfect pitch you like to hit, you're not just flicking it into left field for a single. You're doing damage on it. That's been Stephen Kwan's whole aggressive approach too. You know, you're seeing it with Will Brennan. So I think it's philosophical, but it's also like contact is great and they load it up on all these hitters who can hit any pitch. But if you're swinging a slider out of the zone and you're so good at making contact that you don't swing and miss at that, well, what can you really do with that? That was Oscar Gonzalez's problem, is he would make a ton of contact, but it'd be bad contact. You know, you'd roll a weak one over to the second baseman because, you know, you swung at a pitch out of the zone and you should have just let it go. Like, Stephen Kwan's strikeouts are up a little bit and he's fine with that because it's just a product of being more aggressive, recognizing the pitches that you can actually do damage on and capitalizing on that. So the philosophical part of it has worked. I think there are still adjustments that need to be made. You know, eventually, like with Kwan, pitchers will recognize, oh, he's actually going to swing at the first pitch now. Okay, well, then maybe we got to pitch around him a little bit and not just groove one in on the first pitch. And eventually that'll lead to Kwan being more patient again, drawing walks. It's a cat and mouse game, and I think they're playing it a lot better than they were last season.
You don't know this about me, Zach, but I am a big Gabe Arias honk. I was hoping he'd win the shortstop job this year because I just love the power and defense combination. His numbers, he hasn't played as much as Rocchio. His numbers through what he's played are better than Rocchio's. Could we see a spot in the next month where maybe Arias starts to chip into the playing time of Rocchio.
Yeah, I think so. Steven Vogt has not been shy about trying to lean on the hot hand, and there's a reason Arias played center field, and he had starts at like four different positions last week. So, I mean, the amazing thing is he went 9-for-108 against lefties last season, and this year he's 6-for-11. So it's night and day, and it's a tiny, tiny sample size, but it was rough last year, and it didn't make sense. There were things with his swing and his approach that just weren't working against lefties, and now to match his output against lefties from last year, he'd have to go 3-for-97. So he's been much better, and if he keeps that up, then yeah, you know, you're going to get to a point in the calendar where you actually can draw some conclusions and base playing time or promotions or demotions off of it.
Zach, it wouldn't be an interview about the Guardians without a Kyle Manzardo question. He's raking it right now at AAA. How close are we, and how motivated are the Guardians to get him up to the big leagues?
Yeah, it's weird because he's ready. There's nothing left for him to accomplish in Columbus. And this team ranks, I think they're third in runs per game in the majors, which is insane because, again, like, it's not like you look at Freeman's numbers or Brennan or Bo Naylor or Rocchio. Like, those guys aren't crushing it, but they have squeezed every drop of production out of this lineup that they can. So there's maybe not desperation. Like in past years, it seems like they always got off to slow starts hitting, and, you know, everyone would be clamoring for the hitting coach to be fired and the top seven prospects to get called up, and it doesn't feel like that's the case right now. But there is space for him in this lineup. I mean, they've rotated guys through the DH spot, and you could call up Manzardo, hit him fifth, and not look back. So I think they'll get to that point eventually. You know, they typically try to find a time when the player's going well and maybe there's a need. There certainly isn't. I guess there's not a need, but I think he'd be better than we've seen from some guys so far. So it'll be interesting to see when they start to feel that pressure.
All right, before we go, we got about 30 seconds here. This is a show poll we have out there that people can vote on our Twitter poll, afternoon, 923FAN. Who has a lower approval rating right now, Zach, the NCAA or MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred?
What is – Manfred's been commissioner for how long? Like, what's his highest approval rating ever been?
Three.
I mean, is it – you're right. I guess – so that's my answer.
I think that's a fair answer there. I've said the NCAA, but I think I'm taking the L on this one. Zach, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you. And, again, you and Jason did a phenomenal job on the McKenzie piece a week ago. Really great stuff, man. Appreciate you.
Much appreciated. Take care, guys.
Zach Meisel of The Athletic, who joined us in the last segment talking about a Josh Naylor extension. You asked the question. Good question out of you, by the way.
Well, thank you. I thought about it all day.
You did, and I saw you. You're the baseball guy and the prep guy, and you were just chomping at the bit. I just wouldn't shut up. But you got the question in. I think what's interesting about it is I was actually pretty surprised that the Guardians didn't get something on the books contractually. If we remember Jose Ramirez a couple years ago, that's, you know, basically 24 hours before he would have been traded if he didn't sign the contract extension. Jimenez got, extended in spring training as well. I'm surprised that it didn't happen, not just with Naylor, but with all the other guys that that Zach mentioned. I will say, though, I think Josh is way more complicated because he really is limited to a first base or DH. And when Manzardo comes up, assuming he sticks, Josh is going to be a DH. It's tough to try and ascertain the value. He hasn't been healthy. And it feels like this is his breakout year. So you're in between. Well, he hasn't played a full season yet. Like he's been on the roster, but he has not been able to play more than 140 games. And now all of a sudden you're getting this newfound production out of him. I think they're in an impossible situation with him. Because I now think the fan expectation is that you do put pen to paper with him.
So how quickly do you think this could get done?
I mean, I would imagine if it doesn't happen by this offseason, by like December, I would imagine that you would begin taking offers for him. because something the Guardians have not done well recently. And they've got, I mean, listen, they've made a couple bad trades. Like, they've made trade for guys in their lower minors, like Junior Caminero, who's maybe the best prospect in baseball. They traded him for a guy who topped out at AAA for them. A guy who was closer to the majors. They've made a couple trades like that. So, like, their system could be about 15% better if they hadn't made, like, three of those kind of trades.
Yeah.
Yonier Diaz, the kid from Houston, it's another guy that they traded for, like, a bad arm, basically. But, like, what was the question?
How quickly could they get this done?
Okay. I don't think it's happening in season.
I do it every 20 seconds.
I don't think it's happening in season. That would be the most surprising thing to me. And in a way, I kind of prefer that. Like, let it play out. Because if he goes out, and let's say he does have another injury that cost him 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks, his value is going to decrease a little bit. And listen, if the guy goes out and has a 40 home run season, I mean, right now he's on pace. If he plays 145 games, he's hitting 40 home runs at this current pace. If he plays his previous career high, which was like 130 games, he's hitting like 35. So the risk now is paying him versus not paying him. And this winter, if he's healthy, plays 140 some games, and he hits 40 home runs, you probably can't afford him. And you're in a position where you've got a window opening now, reopening because of the young guys you have. And Naylor's window is a little bit past those guys. You know, you got a couple more years of Kwan. You got a couple more years. Jimenez is signed long term. So a lot of your other guys, his brother is obviously, this is his first full year in the bigs. So are you willing to risk losing him for nothing in 2 years or trading him in a year that at a minimum value if you can't extend him in the name of we've got a team that can win now and we want to help these young guys learn how to win? I don't think it's as simple and cut and dry as just pay the man, because I've tried to find like a comp for a guy that's had the injuries with the production when he's been healthy plus emotional leader of your team. The answer is I don't know. And I think that puts a really smart front office who was just rated, what was that, one of the 10 best front offices in baseball. I think it puts them behind the eight ball. What else stood out that Zach talked about there?
I mean, obviously the McKenzie stuff, the Gavin stuff.
Gavin.
And also, like, how real is this team?
Yeah, I think I loved what he said about, you know, some of the things you have to figure out over the next little bit here are guys like Floreal, guys like, I mean, Rocchio versus Arias is another one. If Freeman's going to stick in center field long term, like, I think those things are important. I still think, like, I don't think it's flukish that Kwan, Jimenez, Hosey, Naylor, and like one other hitter can carry the production of this lineup. For me, it's about, can you get and keep Tristan healthy, and can he get Gavin healthy? Because if you can go McKenzie to Gavin to Bybee to Allen, you could win the World Series with that roster, with that pitching staff, this bullpen, and that lineup as it's performing today.
You feel that good about it?
Yes, because you've got two guys that I think have number one stuff in Williams and McKenzie, and I think Bybee's a two on most, stuff-wise, he's a two on most teams. I think he's like Cliff Lee. Of a guy who, like, on some teams might be the ace, on other teams he's, like, just a really, like, a phenomenal two. I think that is Bybee's ceiling. I think he could hit that this year. And Logan Allen's a middle-of-the-rotation guy that I think if he's your four, you're locked down. You only really need three starters in the postseason, three really good starters. You add a fourth one and this bullpen, a middle-of-the-road lineup can go a very long way if you're getting middle-of-the-road power with top of the league run production. That's marrying 2022 with like your 2016 team who didn't have a lot of power but had just enough.
What's your biggest concern? Is it Tristan?
It's probably Tristan. Well, it's Tristan or Gavin. With one of those guys, you can win. With neither guys, the math just gets really tough to kind of figure it out. Again, I think you can win the regular season, but it's more about, if both guys end up needing Tommy John or if both guys have season-ending injuries or cost you half a season, it's really tough to see you being able to go into October and make a difference. You've told the room you need parental advice, and I'm here for you.
So the other night I'm at the Cavs game, and my daughter sends me a text like midway through the game, like around halftime. And, you know, we'd been talking for quite a while about this topic. And keep in mind, my daughter is 14.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be 15 in the fall.
Please stop saying that.
I know, dude. It's crazy. So she texts me and she goes, "Dad, give me a follow." I'm like, So I check my Instagram and then I see that my daughter had created an Instagram account, which, to be fair, we had talked about a while ago. Like, we've been talking about social media and stuff because, you know, all our friends have it.
Yeah.
And like, that's how they communicate or whatever. And I get the
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Text, and I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah.
So I text her. I'm like, we'll be having an Instagram conversation this weekend. Actually, I think I said a social media intervention about social media. So yeah, I mean, what's the right age? I mean, she's had a phone for a long time.
So this is, I'm not the worst person to ask about this. I'm super cautious about this. My daughter got a birthday, got a phone for her 13th birthday, and we still have a no social media rule. And it's the same thing as like driving. Like when you're a young kid and your parents are like, well, I trust you as a driver, it's everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
My kid is a great kid. She's a little immature, not like she would do the wrong thing, but
they're kids.
Yeah.
Like they're going to be a little immature.
And she's still a little, like, even for a 13-year-old, she's still more of a kid than she is a young woman. And so I have kind of said, like, it was the phone, right? Well, all my friends have it. And now we're almost a year into having the phone, and it's like, well, all my friends have TikTok or Instagram or their own YouTube channel or this. And I'm like, we need to slow play it, because I don't know how much you can safeguard your kid, man, on social media. Like, mm-hmm. There are a lot of really good, socially conscionable people out there. There's also just enough turds out there.
Yeah.
And here's my problem, dude. I will never be able to be even keeled if somebody crosses a line with my kid. Like, when it comes to me,
you're going to jail.
You're like, I even talked about the story about on the airplane sending somebody flying because they about knocked Ness's head off, and I was not having that. Granted, I had been flying for 6 hours. Like, I am fiercely overprotective of my wife and kids. And so, like, I'll be honest, I don't know. I don't think there's a perfect age, man. Are you comfortable with it? Like, I think that's probably the big thing.
I told her, we talked like a few weeks back, because she really wants to Snapchat, because all her friends, that's like how they do use that more than they use texting.
Yeah.
And like, what I mean is, that's where they find out what time practice is. If there's like a snow day or something, they find out, okay, and she's like, Dad, everyone's on the team has it. And that's how they communicate. I'm like, well, we'll talk about the Snapchat. I'm like, I'm more comfortable with the Instagram because you can make a private account.
Yeah.
And also, like, we can log into it and see what's going on.
Yeah.
The Snapchat's it's just a little sus.
Not just that, man, but there are so many apps, like Lives in Marching Band. Oh, hey, by the way, there's a band app now. Now that one you can't have, like, the kid can't have an account without the parent having the account, which is smart. But, like, you know, Liv was talking to me the other day because, you know, we've been talking about maybe moving this summer and we might move out of her school district. And when we were talking about her, she was like, well, my one friend doesn't have a phone, but she has this account. Dude, I was like, I've never heard of that, so that app. And it was like a messaging app that I was like, this is freaking me out. Like, if it was just as simple as I want Twitter or Instagram or like a website or an app that I'm comfortable with and have used, I don't think I'd have a problem. But like Snapchat, dude, I have no frame of reference for Snapchat.
I don't either. I never had a Snapchat. Actually, I did for like one day.
A 38-year-old married man.
Just not my thing.
Has no business. Now, if you started with Snapchat a decade ago or whatever it was, that's fine. But like me now at 38, married, 3 kids, career, getting on, that's stranger danger to me. I would feel stranger danger about myself in that. The Cleveland saying, same here. It's a miracle I'm not in jail yet, talking about overprotective. I mean, here's the thing. I do think, like, this is dad to dad. You go into it realizing it's not going to be perfect. You can't. There's no way. Like, mistakes will be made. And I don't mean from your daughter's side of things. Like, you have to go in understanding that people are going to cross your boundaries on whatever, even if it's Instagram on a private. I actually think the Instagram thing, I think you're spot on. I think Insta with a private account that you can get into, mm-hmm. that you can double check, I think is good. I think once you get into Snapchat or some of the third-party messenger apps that they have where, you know, anything where a message disappears within a certain amount of time, I'm very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I'm same way, man. And, you know, you can do that on Instagram, too, with the DMs. You can put on, like, vanishing mode or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That worries me a little bit.
Have you ever done that on accident, by the way?
Yeah, it turns, like, black.
Yeah, I had no idea what it meant.
I don't like it.
And it immediately triggered Vanessa's, like, insecurity. Like, why do you have it on vanishing mode? And I'm like, what is vanishing mode?
You accidentally pulled down on it?
Yeah, I was like, what does that mean? I don't know. Help me. I'm an old man with social media. Please don't judge me or hate me. No, I mean, I will say kudos to your daughter for trying to play the game the right way. Like, seriously, man.
But here's the thing, dude. She said to me, so she's in high jump on the track team.
Mm-hmm.
And she set a goal of a certain height that she could get. This is what she does to me, man. She'll text me and she'll say, Dad, I have a proposition for you. And I'm like, okay, this is going
to
be good.
They're always trying to sell you something.
And then she does. She's like, if I get, you know, 4'6" at the, or whatever she's jumping. I think it's around 4'6" she's trying to get. And she's like, if I get that at the Federal League meet, do I get Snapchat? And I said, sure.
By the way,
knowing the weather right now is pretty brutal.
So my favorite thing about.
I'm rooting for her to get it. She's got to meet tonight.
My favorite thing about what you're saying is I didn't realize how much negotiating there'd be with your
children?
Kids.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just my daughter, though. Well, my son doesn't give a rip about anything.
See, it's funny. My oldest daughter, she kind of always has an angle. And I don't mean that in like a bad way. It means she always is thinking of like, she's like Andrew Barry. She always has like a value proposition. And now the twins are doing it. And so like when one kid does it, it's a lot. When 3 kids do it in the same night, it is the most overwhelming thing in the world. Chip on Facebook saying, I'm not trying to be a D, but my youngest daughter is 21, and I have to say, I feel your daughter and Dustin's daughter dabble a little more in social media than you realize. Maybe not entirely, but I bet they're sneaking something past you guys. Well, they wouldn't be teenagers without it.
You know the stuff that we did when we were kids? I mean, it was different than now because we didn't have phones, but... Bro, we were doing some shady stuff.
Yeah, well, and like...
Not that anything I want to talk about.
Yeah, no, I don't want to give them ideas, but like... No. Well, okay, like, don't you just have to assume your kids are going to do stuff like that? Because you did it. And here's the thing. My mom acts as if when my grandpa was alive, she was a saint. And it was once he passed away that she became a hellion. Nay. It was all 3 of their kids. My dad will blatantly tell you he lived in the basement because it had a separate door that he could sneak out when his parents were asleep. Like, the whole point of it. Like, I think kids today are so much more upfront, and every kid's sneaky. I think my kid is so much more upfront than I ever was with my parents. I kept my parents in the dark for so much stuff, and my kid is just like, hey, by the way, this is going on. Can I do this?
I feel like my kid's a pretty good kid. you know, pretty knows good. Right from wrong, makes good decisions. So I'm hopeful that that doesn't change anytime soon. But yeah, we got an Instagram account.
Okay, so this is me, and I don't want to upset your daughter now. The Instagram thing, I think, is fair game. I don't even know you can have Snapchat. I don't think you should be able to have a Snapchat until you're 18. Because, dude, I know.
I feel like that is because of, well, whatever.
Because of dudes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'll be honest,
I know how I was.
I know how I would have been with Snapchat. Dude, I had MySpace DMs. Bro. And I was out there in those streets. You give me something where this message is going to disappear how much time is it anymore? Now I'm so friggin' old. No. Everyone's getting a pick. Everyone. You get a pick. And you get a pick. Everybody gets a pick.
Bro, when I was in high school, we had to, like, get on the household computer for, you know, and we had to pay by the minute, I think, for the AOL. It would be like instant messaging. Did you ever, high school girls trying to, that's how you tried to meet up.
Did you ever have to do the hurry up because you heard the key in the door? For whatever you were doing, whatever you looking at the family computer. I remember getting caught and you're just like, what is the order of operations to get out of this as quickly as possible? You know what I realized? Turn off the screen.
That happened to me in college with my roommate.
Dude, I got to tell you.
He never knew until like a year later, and I told him.
I can't tell the story on air, but there's a kid in school in BG who had no ability to tell that somebody was open. Like he was just in the moment.
Like no towel in the door or nothing?
No, but with himself and a computer. And let's just say one day his roommate left the door open, and It anybody walking past could have got a glance. That's all I'm going to say.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.